after one of the most historical decisions in the last 50 years, we wake up today with a reality that Roe versus Wade is most likely going to be overturned. Today on Life Talks, we're going to be discussing a post-Roe world. And we discussed this about a month ago with Josh Brom. I'm Ben. I'm here with Dan. We are the teaching pastors here at Life Fellowship. And I don't know about you, but maybe when you were hearing these, it just felt like it was a distant thing. It felt like it was so off in the future, or maybe it was something that you'd never even thought was possible. But, you know, Monday night, news was leaked, and we are facing a reality, Dan, that I'll just be honest with you. I never thought was going to come into play.
Yeah, I totally didn't either. And I'm going to have some mea culpas that I'll eventually.
You're going to eat some crow later.
Yeah. Well, I mean, truly, all my adult life, I've been waiting for the potential of this moment.
Yeah.
Because I'm the glass half empty guy. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, we've got several things I want to talk about today. But one of them is, first of all, just the assault on the institution about what happened, which was basically this, that somebody inside the Supreme Court released a preliminary draft of a decision whereupon Roe versus Wade would have been overturned. The final votes are not taken.
Correct.
But there's indication that this is the way it's going to go, whether it's going to be a 5-4 vote or a 6-3 vote.
Correct.
Is not known at this point, whether it's going to completely overturn Roe versus Wade, which is what this particular draft said, or whether it's going to scale it back, which there could be other drafts that are out there,
right,
that didn't get released,
right,
and nobody knows about.
Right.
Because what happens, and just so you understand, you know, I'm not speaking just because of things I've read. I've had two very, very close friends who clerked on the Supreme Court.
Yes.
One of them clerked for the Chief
Thomas.
Justice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Who died later, but I mean, yeah, at that time it was William Rehnquist. And not only that, I have had extended conversations with an actual justice of the Supreme Court, mm-hmm, on more than one occasion. Mm. I've sat in the office of a Supreme Court justice. Mm. I've sat in the court several times, mm, watching cases. So I'm a little bit familiar with it. Obviously, I'm not an expert. I'm certainly not a lawyer. But I've studied and I've learned and I've talked to people who know how the process goes. So when the process of taking a vote occurs, there's a preliminary vote. They go and they begin writing opinions. They circulate them among the staff. And mostly the clerks do a lot of the research and the writing. But the final draft comes from the pen of the justice that's been appointed. In this case, it was Samuel Alito, who's, mm-hmm, a known pro-life guy that was appointed by President Bush. And so and then once they debate these finer, mm-hmm, points, they'll either sign it or they'll do a dissenting opinion. And if you dissent, you'll sign that. Or you can have a partial agreement, but then you've got to write your own findings on that. So it's very complicated. But here's what has happened. This is the most exclusive club in the world. It only has 9 members. And part of the way they are able to function at all is because they develop a professional camaraderie that's built on trust and confidence. And the rules are very, very clear. What happens, you know, between the justices stays between the justices. Nothing is said in advance. This court speaks as one,
right,
in a specific way. So what has happened is all of the traditions of the court have come under assault by the act of one, probably a law clerk.
Correct.
But we don't know. We don't know what
we don't
know.
Yeah, we don't know if this clerk operated independently.
Whether it was with the permission of a justice, which would be unprecedented.
Right.
In American history, it would be absolutely devastating to the court.
Yeah.
We don't know where it lies. But we do know this. In terms of impact, in terms of offending the traditions and the representation of the third branch of government, the judicial branch, in my opinion, this is the equivalent of what happened on January 6, 2021, whenever they breached the halls of the Capitol and went into the chambers of the Senate and the House. Mm. This is not a small deal. It is a big deal, and the ramifications are going to be felt for many years, because if this is a one-off situation and it happens again or again and again and again, then the credibility of the court is just going to be shot.
Yeah, all of a sudden it will be open to outside opinion,
yeah,
which is one of the main things. It's the least politicized. It's supposed to be the most politicized branch in government.
Yeah, and it had become increasingly politicized, and it really started in my lifetime back in the 1980s when President Reagan appointed. I'm losing his name. I'll come up with it in just a second. He wrote Slouching Toward Gomorrah, but appointed him.
Bork.
Thank you.
Yeah.
To be a Supreme Court, and Senator Ted Kennedy from Massachusetts went political on how always before it was about credentials, and then it became about positions.
Yes.
And nominees were never supposed to talk about their positions or talk about their philosophy, and when it came down to that, and they ultimately stopped the nomination based on his politics, that since that day. They've turned absolutely contentious. Clarence Thomas, became about character assassination, which continued with Kavanaugh, and to a lesser extent Gorsuch. But this has now become a blood sport in Washington, and the question now is very real in that is a president going to be able to appoint a Supreme Court justice unless he also has control of the Senate moving forward? Used to be you had 60 votes, now it's 50 votes because the contentiousness has gotten so bad. So this is another sign that our nation is unraveling because of the extremes, and in my view, also the extremes of the left and some of their tactics. But that's a conversation for another day. But
let me ask you a quick question because. I agree with what you're saying. I understand the importance of what a breach this was. Why do you think as Christians, why should we care?
Yeah. Well, I think we should care because civil government is one of the three institutions that are ordained by God. The health of the family, the health of the church, and the health of civil government are all incumbent upon the privileges that we have as created human beings in the image of God. And so when those institutions are unhealthy, then we're going to have negative impact. And so that's a short and a quick answer, but I sometimes become rather dismissive of civil government. That's really what I'm saying is
someone would say, oh, this isn't a big deal. No, this is a big deal because whenever you are trying to when you're trying to tear down the rule of law, whether it's written or unwritten, it's what you're doing is it's becoming more barbaric. I think that's what it feels like.
Well, that's exactly what it is, because if you don't respect the rule of law, then the only other option is the rule of might.
Yes. Mob rule. That's what they're wanting to do.
Yeah. Well, and that then becomes about violence. But ultimately, mob rule, which is anarchy, is going to be replaced by authoritarian rule, which is totalitarianism. And so the reason why the American experiment has been successful is because we were self-governed before we were governed by our system, and our system is accountable to the people. And so as long as we elected good people and moral people and people who kept the rules and respected laws, we had a stable government. But as our country has moved away from self-governance and personal morality and personal standards of ethics and morals, what we have done is we've started electing people who have values like ours, and that's the problem. See, that's why when the Bush administration tried to export democracy in the Middle East, it didn't work because corrupt and evil people elect corrupt and evil governments. Prior to that, they were ruled by dictators who were in the pockets of the American government. I mean, they really were. We set up the dictators.
Right.
They were evil, horrible people, but they were our evil, horrible people, and they were on our payroll. So whether talking about the Shah of Iran or the president of Egypt or all these others, and it was all about us being able to get to the oil also because it kept our economic machine going. But then when we say, oh, you pick your own leaders, then they pick people that hated us and our values.
Yeah.
And so that's why we have such turmoil in the Middle East. So going back, though, to this issue, a couple of things we've got to realize is that if Dobbs' decision is in the favor of pro-lifers, and I am unashamedly, unabashedly pro-life, I want Roe versus Wade turned over.
Correct.
But if we as Christians believe that is the end of the battle for human life, we are absolutely naive and have our heads completely in the sand.
Yeah.
It is just one more skirmish in a bigger rule or bigger war about who sets the rules, where the rules come from, is there absolute truth, does life have value, and 100 other different issues. And so we have to be prepared that winning this skirmish is at best temporary and at worst going to set off reactions that are significant. So we know right now that our country is hugely divided, extremes to the right and extremes to the left.
Right.
I used to be what I consider to be a really, really conservative, almost far right by many definitions person. Today, I find myself calling myself a moderate because the extremes have moved to where they're at. I've not moved, but a lot of people have, and they're beyond where I'm at.
Yeah.
When you start talking about violence and overthrows and and all these kind of things, that I'm out.
Right.
Which is why I don't have a political affiliation right now. I'm not a member of either party because I'm concerned about where both of them are headed. That being said, we know that we've got an election coming up. Mm-hmm. We know that right now, because of the economy and some things, that it's going to be a bad day for the Democrats unless something happens. So what is the natural Democrat response going to be? Well, we're going to want to use anything that comes our direction to either divide the Republicans, or it's going to be to rally our base. Well, this is a perfect base rallier because Democrats... Basically, there was a day before Democrats went extreme where they said, well, abortion needs to be rare but safe.
Yeah.
Today it is abortion needs to be able to be taking place until the baby is viable and beyond.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the extremes that are going on, and we're seeing what the extreme reaction is going to look like now. It's going to look like this in two ways. First of all, governmentally, those states which are more liberal, that would be what we would call blue states, are passing laws right and left that basically are permitting the most... egregious, partial birth abortion.
Yeah.
There's even one that says after a baby's born alive that they have 28 days before they have to give the baby medical care, and they can let the baby die if there's some kind of defect in it. There's, I mean, they're horrible. Now, those will all go to court eventually, and that'll bring me to something else that has yet to be decided that I think is important. But and on the right. And again, I'm for these laws. I believe them. They got the Texas law that's now being replicated in 21 states that basically says, no, we're not going to have abortion.
Right.
Just period.
Right.
Or if we're going to have it, it's going to be extremely rare, life of the mother or something along that line. So we're immediately polarizing our nation to these extremes. So that's one facet. The other facet is what private business is starting to do. And this is kind of under the radar. Most people aren't seeing it. But I understand Amazon just issued a statement on this. And they're basically saying, if you want an abortion and you work for us, we will send you to a state that has liberal abortion philosophy and practices, and we'll pay for it.
Yes.
Up to $4,000 in the case of one business.
Yeah.
So in other words, they're going to use the money that they make off of your you know, supporting them to facilitate a murder.
Yeah.
Because I believe that's what it is.
Yep.
And by the way, this is both moral implications, but also, you know what? If you murder your baby, you're not going to have to pay that mother for comp time or for pregnancy time, family leave time.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to be able to stay on the job, all the other things. Don't believe this is just pure benevolence.
Nope.
This is even wickeder than that.
Yeah, yeah.
So those are two aspects that we see coming out. These are reactions to the what is happening. Now, this is important to understand about the Roe versus Wade versus Dobbs decision. Roe versus Wade has been a problem to constitutional originalists all along because basically what it said was there is a fundamental right in the Constitution for a woman to be able to terminate a pregnancy.
You can't really find it.
It's not there.
It's horrible legal philosophy.
Which has been the contention of conservatives all the time.
Right.
So where has the ability to limit these kind of procedures always been vested? As close to the people as possible on the state level. That's where it was before the Roe versus Wade decision. So all it did was create... And that's why it's been so divisive for 50 some odd years.
Yeah.
It's because it's not a clear constitutional issue. Now, let's say we wanted it to be a constitutional right. There's a process whereby you can amend the Constitution and say every woman has a right to terminate a baby. And you can put that in place and codify it in Constitution that they have a
and
right
there's
to
no more. There's no more argument.
No more argument, no more But what we have are activist judges who say we're taking the shortcut. And when you take a shortcut in the rule of law, you create controversy.
Yeah.
All that the Dobbs decision would do, it doesn't go far enough as it's currently drafted, in my opinion, but it wasn't supposed to. But all it does, it says it goes back to the states.
Right.
So in other words, the 21 states who've done this and the other 21 states who haven't, they get to set
every
the rules
state gets state. To decide how legal or how illegal they want to make
which
abortion.
They've been able to do for over 200 years, which there's a lot of other parts of the law that are up to the states, because under the Constitution, anything not expressly in the Constitution is a matter for the state.
Which is with the whole Federalist philosophy.
Federalist philosophy. Yeah. And people who don't understand history don't understand why this is an important principle. And so, and of course, you get the overheated rhetoric, things like, well, this is going to call into question gay marriage and all these other things. I wish, but it doesn't, because we're talking about a third party here.
Right.
And the third party is the child. Here's the fundamental question that remains undecided by the Supreme Court that I hope someday they will address. Do human beings have a fundamental right to life prior to seeing sunshine?
Yes. Yes.
You know, do they have a fundamental, and at what point does life come with rights? Is it at viability? Is it at quickening? Is it at conception?
Mm-hmm.
At some point, the court's probably going to have to make a decision on this, a ruling on this at some level. Otherwise, infanticide definitely is on the
happening.
Table. On the table. So that will be the next big fight.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to file a case that gets sent up and makes the Supreme Court speak to this issue.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court may not be willing to do that for quite some time.
Yeah.
I suspect that a liberal court would love to speak to this because in that they would find that there is no right to life.
Well, what are your thoughts on this becoming federal law? Because I know that's what that's you're hearing that come from certain circles.
And so, well, Congress can pass any law they want to.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, will it pass constitutional muster? And that is a decision. That's why we have checks and balances.
Mm-hmm.
So let's assume that they do pass a federal law that says every woman has a right to abortion. The best way to fight that is what I just said. Then ask the question, well, do we have a right to life?
Mm.
And if we have a right to life based on the Constitution, then that law immediately becomes unconstitutional and can be struck down.
Correct.
But you've got to have constitutional grounds on which to strike it down. Right now, they could do that, and it'd probably be okay, unless they would consider it an overreaching authority of the federal government over that which is implicitly allowed by the states.
Mm.
I'm not a judge, nor am I a lawyer,
right.
So I don't know the answer
it's
to
a
that.
Very, I think what it's going to do is it's going to, like you said very early, it's going to change the landscape in ways we're not even, I mean, this is kind of opening up Pandora's box for a lot of skirmishes to continue to multiply. And so as a Christian, though, knowing there's this political battle going on, how do we navigate the conversations that we need to have with our children, with our friends, with our family? Like if you are a parent right now with kids in the home, how would you talk about this with your kids?
Yeah, I may not be the best person to ask on this because I feel very strongly about this. I believe there are some things that surpass politics.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, when it comes to issues that are very political, in my older years, not in my younger years, but in my older years, I have determined that I'm going to try to stay as far removed from politics as I can in my role as a pastor. Now, as a private citizen, I've got strong opinions.
Yeah.
But this is not a political issue for me. This
right.
is a moral issue.
I agree.
And as such, I have taught my own children from birth that abortion is murder.
Mm.
From the moment of conception on, when life occurs, because you and I have used the illustration before, and it's not cliche. Maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
If they found a one-cell organism on Mars, the headlines of the New York Times tomorrow would be life found on Mars. And so when you have a one-celled organism that exists in a woman's fallopian tube, it is life.
Yeah.
And that is an undeniable reality that only people who deny that there are more, that there are only two genders would want to believe that that's not life.
Correct.
And a clump of cells is still life.
Yeah.
So, In the end, when I talk to my children on these issues, obviously, I'm not going to teach them, you know, how barbaric partial birth abortion is, you know, when they're 6 years old. But I began teaching the issues that abortion is wrong. It's murder. Mm. It's murder. I don't say it's a procedure. No, it's murder.
Yeah.
It's not a fetus. It's a baby.
Mm.
So I use very clear, very specific, and very accurate terms. I don't use euphemisms.
Mm.
Now, you know, and many of the listeners know this, my children, three of my four children, were from crisis pregnancy centers where women would often go instead of going to an abortion clinic, sometimes maybe not even knowingly.
Right.
And they received counsel, but for whatever reason, they could not parent, and so they gave the babies up for adoption, and that's how I got my children, three of the four, specifically from a single crisis pregnancy center.
Yeah.
So again, this is very personal to me. And by the way, it's very personal to my kids, all of whom have been accosted at times by people who were pro-abortion. I don't even use the word pro-choice.
Yeah.
Because the baby didn't get a choice.
Yeah.
So it's pro-abortion. So people who are pro-abortion will say things to my kids, and my kids will say, well, then by your definition, I shouldn't be alive.
Right, yeah.
And it's pretty stunning.
Yes.
When you know, you get confronted with that reality.
Yes, yes.
But in the end, I believe our children need to know what is at stake here.
That's right.
We have this coddling of the next generation on a lot of levels. This is probably a whole other episode. But we're not being honest with our kids in many ways. And this is one of those ways in which I think we have a duty to be honest with the stark reality that there are some who believe that they have the right to determine what is life and whether or not it's valuable. If a kid has Down syndrome, if a kid is handicapped in some way or disabled, you know, that their life is of less value because they don't meet. And that seems to fly in the face of most liberal values is the ironic thing.
Yes.
But in the end, this is not about life for them. It is about sex. And they want to be able to have sex without consequence.
Yes.
Let's make sure that it's really, really clear.
Yes.
This isn't about poverty.
Right.
This isn't about abandonment. This isn't even about rape. Because I will tell you, I know right now, I know a young lady who is getting ready to give birth to a child that she very much wants, and it is a product of rape.
Mm.
Now, you say, well, you're cold-hearted, you would force, and so the fact is, that's a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of all the kids that are being slaughtered in this country.
Right.
So let's not lose sight of the forest for the trees.
Right, right.
And we can parse out some of those issues at a later point. The bottom line, is life sacred? Is life important? And is every life worth a chance?
Mm.
And I think thinking and reasonable people that have 2 cents worth of compassion would draw the conclusion, yes, they are, and that we're not entitled to make that choice for the child.
That's right. I feel like we just skimmed the surface.
We did. I had a lot more stuff to say.
Well, let's save it for next time.
All right.
I think you know, this was going to be one episode. I think we need to make it two, just because we're going to have to walk this out as a church, as believers, and to look at this beyond the political lens. Because when we read the news, everything's going to be through this political lens, and I think we need to look at it through the biblical lens as well. So we'll talk about that at our next episode. Thank you so much for joining us at Life Talks. We look forward to talking to you next time.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well, so leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com, or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.